Life, it's a battle, especially when we get sick. We talk about our fight with this, our battle with that, which we either win or lose, in which case we normally stop talking. My first guest has been thinking about the language of medicine and wondering if we need to drop the military metaphors, or at least ease off on them a bit. His name is Dr. Dhruv Kulam, a resident in internal medicine at the Massachusetts General Hospital in the United States. I spoke with him the other day and asked him what the problem was with fighting talk.
I think this is just an incredibly important topic and something that is probably underappreciated. And many people would advocate that the language that we're using to describe illness is actually just semantics. But what's becoming increasingly clear to me, and I think even in the research this bears out, is that the words that we choose to describe illness are very powerful and they carry weight. They kind of create the environment in which we discuss things like goals of care and we design treatment plans, and they affect the treatments that people choose, and they affect the way that people view their diseases and the way that they cope with illness and the way that they view themselves ultimately. And so I think it's actually tremendously important to be cognizant of the words and the metaphors that we use to describe illness and disease. And the other thing that I would say is that it's something that we do all the time in medicine. So in medicine, the use of metaphor is really pervasive, and we talk about battling cancer, and we talk about chronic disease as a marathon, not a sprint. And there are studies that find that physicians use metaphors in up to two-thirds of all their conversations with patients who have serious illnesses, and physicians who use metaphors are actually seen as better communicators.
And the thing is that life is full of metaphors. Our language is full of metaphors, the way we use words. In fact, you could argue that life is just one great big metaphor. So how do you avoid that in medicine? Or is it not a case of avoiding it? Is it a case of thinking about the imagery of what you're saying?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not necessarily that we need to shy away from metaphor, because I think it's so pervasive that to extricate it from language altogether would be very difficult, if not impossible. I think what we need to do is be more deliberate and more thoughtful about the ones that we choose.
The thing is, medicine is often something that involves complicated science, complicated scientific ideas. And if you want to simplify things as a physician for those you're working with, you'd probably choose a metaphor or two, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I think thinking about this has made me reconsider the way that I talk about metaphors or use them, because as a doctor, there's a lot of power in the way that you present a disease or a condition or the risks and benefits of these very complex treatments. And that's true for everything from cardiac stents to surgery to antibiotics and blood transfusions. And like you're saying, it's very difficult, I think, to strike the right balance between giving enough information and all the information that a patient wants to make a decision, but also not overwhelming them with too much information or jargon. And so you can see how the way in which you frame the risks and benefits can be very powerful. And metaphors can actually help us do this, but they can also set the stage for something like a battlefield instead of a treatment course. We want to be very careful about the ones that we do use.
You've probably grown up, in terms of a medical professional, using those kind of metaphors yourself.
Right, absolutely. It's kind of, we think about all our treatments and all our conditions on some level as metaphors. We think of antibiotics as kind of disrupting the supply chain for bacteria to replicate. We think of diabetes causing sugar to kind of coat red blood cells. And so metaphors actually have helped us learn medicine. So it's not surprising that they infuse the way we talk about medicine with our patients as doctors.
What evidence do we have, if any, that the choice of language can affect the outcome? Maybe first just how a patient might feel about his or her condition.
Right. So there's evidence both within the medical literature, but also in the psychological literature. And so I think it's always a little bit tough to quantify or study issues around meaning and metaphor and language, but the studies that have tried to understand the use of metaphor in medicine in a rigorous way really support this intuition that setting disease and treatment up as a battle may not be the best way to go about it. So there was a Polish physician named Bish Lebowski in the 1970s, and he studied the framework that patients use to view their illness. So some patients with cancer view their illness as a challenge. Some view it as an opportunity for growth. Some view it as an enemy or a loss or a punishment. And what he found was that patients who have a more negative view of their illness or view it as an enemy, they have higher rates of depression and anxiety. They have poorer quality of life. They have higher pain scores. They have lower coping scores. And these kinds of findings have been replicated in many other conditions as well. And so we do actually have some evidence that viewing disease as an enemy or something to be fought against is not helping patients cope with their illness.
Does it go so far as to influence the outcome, the efficacy of any medicine the patient might be taking?
I don't think we have good evidence to suggest that. So I don't think we have evidence to suggest that people taking the same treatment and having different outlooks about that treatment, it would affect the ultimate outcome. What we do, I think, have evidence of is people may choose different treatments or different treatment options based on the way that they view their illness. So it's entirely possible, and in fact plausible, that patients who have a more militaristic or battle-like view towards maybe end-of-life care would choose more aggressive end-of-life treatments that may not prolong their life or improve the quality of their life. So people would make decisions about how they want to spend their final days based on kind of the discussions and the language and the metaphor that we use to explain their conditions.
It's not surprising somebody might view the cancer as an enemy. But when we think about military metaphors, I'm thinking of chemotherapy, I'm thinking of what U.S. General said at some point, we had to destroy the village to save it.
Right, right. And these kind of metaphors have been in our parlance for a very long time. So back in the 17th century, John Donne was talking about illness as something that would blow up the heart and a cannon that batters everything and destroyed us. There's physicians from that era as well. So these military metaphors have been with us for so long. And I think one of the issues that's occurred is that we've internalized the metaphors so much that we don't even recognize that they influence us anymore. So we still monitor for things like insidious disease, and we destroy rogue cells, and we use all weapons at our disposal. And for a very select group of patients, this may be helpful to talk about it in this way. I think the problem is that we as a medical establishment, we kind of embrace this way of talking about cancer, and it sets patients up into this kind of adversarial battle between them and their disease.
Well, I use that phrase, we had to destroy the village to save it, to suggest that maybe the use of language, military metaphors, actually influences the kind of treatment that you might decide to take, as in the kind of medicines you might prescribe.
Right. No, I think that's absolutely true. I think the problem is people definitely will take different treatments based on how you describe the treatment course or their illness. The main problem, I think, becomes is that as we describe treatment as a battle and a patient as combatant, there's an inherently adversarial tone that's set. And so changes in their medication regimen might become a retreat. A transition to palliative care marks the battle as being lost. And so we place an unfair burden on the patient and the doctor, and we end up choosing more and more aggressive options, as you're saying. And if we don't choose those options, we may think of ourselves as weak or like we're giving up, when in reality, it may be the best course of action, most in line with a patient's values and preferences and goals. The problem is that cognitively we shut off some of these options when we discuss cancer treatment in a militaristic way.
If we see medicine as waging war on some sort of enemy and the human body is the battlefield, does that draw us away from the possibility of looking at health as a more holistic issue?
I think so. And I think the issue also becomes that today, we're not living necessarily in a world that's dominated by infectious diseases. And so when we talk about infectious diseases, it's very easy to think of an invader, quite literally bacteria or viruses or fungi, that the body's immune system has to fight against. But now we live more in an age of chronic disease. And so we should think of cancer and heart disease, hypertension, diabetes. These are chronic conditions, and so the idea of fighting disease or battling it is not the most useful approach, but rather we should think about managing or controlling these diseases instead of defeating or annihilating them.
You're listening to Nights on RNZ National. I'm speaking to Dhruv Kula. He's a resident physician at Massachusetts General Hospital and part of Harvard Medical School. We're talking about the language of medicine in New Zealand. I don't know if you had this, it might have even have come from the United States. We had this change from calling people who are in hospital patients to calling them clients. Did that happen in the States as well?
That hasn't happened in the States. I think some health policy discussions do view healthcare, they talk about patients as healthcare consumers or clients, but I think predominantly so within hospitals and within the medical field, I think there's a little bit of a pushback against calling patients clients.
I mean, I've often wondered what impact, if any. I mean, obviously, people made a conscious choice to use that word instead of patient, and I've always wondered, did it make a difference? Was it even a good difference if it did make one?
You know, I don't think so. And you know, we don't have that as a predominant phrasing in the United States. But I'll tell you, one of my mentors once described his resistance to that kind of framing by saying that he doesn't get his butt out of bed at 2 a.m. to go see a client. But he would do that any day of the week for a patient of his, someone who he's in a healing relationship with. And so I think the use of the word client sets this up as more of a business transaction rather than a healing relationship.
And the thing I always thought was, well, it suggests that I've gone to hospital out of my own volition. You know, I chose to do that because I wanted some service from the hospital. Normally people go to hospital because there's no other option.
Right. And I think that's another great point. And I think that's one of the problems with viewing healthcare as strictly a business rather than kind of a therapeutic relationship that we enter into as a matter of necessity. And so people aren't necessarily shopping around in the way that they would shop around for cars or go to the mall because they want to. Most people end up in a hospital or a clinic against their will because of something that's happened to them.
And when we regard, say, cancer as an enemy, of course, the cancer cells in our bodies are our own flesh and blood. They're our own body cells. They're not doing what they're meant to be doing. They're doing it in an unhealthy way. But if I had cancer, that's still me, isn't it?
It is. And so in some ways, when you talk about battling it, you're talking about waging war against yourself, which I think is another one of the sinister kind of effects of viewing this as this adversarial battle between yourself and the cancer, because quite literally, it is part of yourself.
I was kind of amused when I read your article that Nixon, President Nixon, declared war on cancer in the early 70s, way before we had war on drugs or war on anything else.
It's true. It's true. And I think in some ways that was a very effective strategy. I mean, what better than that kind of framing to kind of build up the support, the funds necessary to go to battle against this disease. And I think that's maybe fine on a policy level. It's less fine on an individual level when you're caring for patients on a day-to-day basis.
We also wage wars against germs. Even though there's millions of bacteria in my gut right now, probably doing me a whole lot of good.
That's right. That's right.
Not to mention the fungi.
Right. And it's a matter of kind of distinguishing between the good bacteria and the bad bacteria. But once again, you know, we live in perfect harmony. In fact, we need those good bacteria to help us. And so the idea of going to war against bacteria or viruses or fungi, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
So getting back to you and working with patients, how do you choose the language to use? Because if you just use dry scientific language, that might leave them flat or confused. You're going to use some kind of imagery. How do you work out the right kind of imagery?
Sure. I think a lot of that is dictated by the patient. And so probing to understand where the patient is, how they want to view their illness, instead of forcing upon them any kind of imagery, really, whether it's a battle imagery or a roller coaster or a journey. You know, I'll tell you a story of a patient that I saw recently that has really stuck with me. He's a middle-aged guy with multiple sclerosis that was really progressed, and he could barely move. He would come into the hospital from the nursing home every few weeks with a bladder infection because he needed a catheter to urinate. And he had these terrible, painful bed sores on his back. And one day, he tells me that he just wants to be kept comfortable and that it was his time and he didn't want to be in this pain anymore. But he said that he had told his wife that he would fight, he would battle. He promised her that he wouldn't give up. And I often wonder how different that conversation with his loved ones would be if he didn't have to say that he was giving up, that he didn't want to fight anymore. But instead, what if that conversation was framed as a journey and he was choosing a different path and he was getting off at another exit? And I think this kind of metaphor would really set up a very different environment for that conversation. So I think kind of employing certain metaphors at certain times to help people through the way that they talk about things can be very effective. And we just have to be more thoughtful and deliberate about the ones we choose to employ.
You have to be a bit more sensitive to each individual person, don't you? Really, absolutely. If you're going to do your work as a doctor.
Absolutely. And I think that's true when selecting treatments, that's true when screening for various cancers, and that's certainly true when talking about how people want to move forward with their treatment course.
Are medical schools getting better at teaching young doctors that skill?
I think so. And there's a large push on the part of medical educators to teach these quote-unquote softer skills these days. And for a long time, for decades, medical school had focused on textbook knowledge and rote memorization. And I think there's now a push to understand that we need to figure out how to apply this knowledge better, how to take all this knowledge that we've accumulated and all these risk calculators and treatment guidelines, and how do we better apply that to the individual patient? And that's only going to happen if we find a way to communicate with them more effectively.
Dhruv, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Dr. Dhruv Kular, a resident in internal medicine at the Massachusetts General Hospital in the United States, talking about the language of medicine, medical metaphors, particularly military ones.